Hello, you're listening to Speaking of History with Eric Langhorst, and this is podcast number 6, and today is September 6, 2005. Just kind of a brief outline on our topics for today. I'm going to talk a little bit about what podcasts I've been listening to lately in educational technology. Also, I'd like to talk about a newsletter that I put out each week on email for my parents in my classroom, and I'd also like to briefly talk about a project I'm working on this week that I've named StudyCast that I'm using with my 8th grade students. Before we get into the other topics, just wanted to put out a couple thoughts about Katrina and the hurricane devastation down in the Gulf and in New Orleans in particular. And I'm not going to make this a political forum. I'm not going to get into where I think there needs to be some serious questions answered about how quickly the response was handled. But just overall, it was very sad to see the city of New Orleans, and really almost see a great American city crumble before our eyes. I've only been to New Orleans once, and many people listening to this podcast may have shared the same experience. I did go to the 2004 NET conference in New Orleans, incredibly only about 15 months ago, and to see the convention center in particular, where so many great I can, you know, think back to all these sessions and people that I talked to and all the great things that happened. To see the convention center and all the things that happened there were extremely, made me extremely sad. And just the city in general. We had the group that I went with from our district had an incredible time. We went to some great restaurants, had some great meals, walked around in the French Quarter. In particular, one of the highlights of the trip for me was seeing the D-Day Museum, which is just a couple blocks. Basically, I think it's between the Superdome and the Convention Center. And we spent one afternoon there in between some sessions. And that was really the one thing that I was the most excited about when I found out the conference was in New Orleans, because I had heard so much about it. And hopefully, the museum is okay. I mean, obviously, that's the last thing on anybody's mind right now with all the human loss and all the things that are happening, but I do hope that the D-Day Museum was able to survive, and I think it was on a section of town that had a little bit higher elevation, so once everything kind of settles down, I'll continue to check the D-Day Museum website and see if anything is on the website about the condition of the museum. But as I was watching the devastation in New Orleans, I couldn't help but think about Stephen Ambrose, the great author that wrote D-Day and really pushed for that museum in his hometown, and what he would have thought of the devastation happening in New Orleans. So, my heart goes out to those people, and thinking back to the NET conference that I was at, it just made me extremely sad. I did put a link on the show notes today for a webpage that shows some of the satellite imagery, both before and after the devastation in New Orleans. And the particular website that I selected, there's quite a few out there, actually. If you do a Google search for Katrina satellite images, you'll find quite a few websites. This one I kind of liked because you can click on the image and it'll show up full screen on your computer, and then you can basically toggle between before and after. And I used this in class a couple days ago to show some of the difficulties in getting people out of New Orleans, because when you look at the one overlay of the city, you can really see how basically every transportation route is flooded. And so I used that, and then I also used, they have a great image on there towards the bottom of the page, if you go to that link, that has a picture of the Gulf Coast area, basically the southeastern part of the United States, at night. And it shows the, you can see all the metropolitan cities like Atlanta, New Orleans, and Montgomery. And then you can see the image as of a couple of days ago when the power was still out. And basically the entire Gulf Coast area is completely black in that image. So I used those two images in class the other day. And I use satellite images quite a bit when I'm talking about a geography subject and I want to show the enormity of a event. For example, I used it with a tsunami last December, and the kids, I think, get a feel for what the overall devastation from a natural disaster is like that. So enough about New Orleans. Let's move on to the next major topic today, and that's what podcast I'm currently listening to. And just to kind of give you some background, I try and find as many educational tech podcasts as I can, and I download them. And I tend to listen to the podcast in a couple different ways. One, when I'm working out in the morning, I'll listen to a couple podcasts, or if I'm just working around the yard outside, mowing the lawn, doing stuff like that. I do have an adapter for the car, so I do listen to some podcasts as I'm driving. I know my wife will listen to some podcasts with me, like Mommy Cast and things like that. And so those are kind of the major ways that I listen to podcasts. But these are some of the podcasts that I've been listening to for the last couple of months. The first one is Tech Teachers, and these all have links on the show notes for today's show. Tech Teachers, and this one is in particular interest to me because it's teachers from the Kansas City area where I live and teach, and they're also new teachers. So Ray and Holly talk about their classroom. They've been talking about getting ready for the school year, and now they're talking about their experiences as first-year teachers in the classroom. So that's a great one to check out, especially if you're a new teacher. The next one is Moving at the Speed of Creativity, and that is from a college professor down in Texas. And this person actually emailed me, or I emailed him after I heard one of his podcasts. And he's got a great blog that has a lot of educational tech stories on it, and then he does podcasts on a periodic basis. He is focusing on a one-on-one initiative, if I understand correctly. That is the focus of his dissertation. And so if you're interested in following some really good stories about the one-on-one initiatives in various parts of the country, Moving at the Speed of Creativity is a great blog and podcast to check out. The other one, the first podcast I actually listened to, Connect Learning from David Warlick, and I listen to that all the time. Mr. Warlick presents all over the country and all over the world, and it's great to hear his ideas and what ideas he's gleaned from listening to other people. And that, like I said, that's the first one I've ever listened to, and I think it's already up to 39 episodes, so there's a lot of great material. If you haven't discovered that yet, there's a lot of stuff you can listen to from David Warlick. Also, EdTech Talk, and this one I just recently found about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and recently they've been doing brainstorms where they will get several teachers to call in on Skype, and then they share their views and ideas on new technologies such as blogging, Web 2.0. They've talked about using Skype for conferencing before, and it's very interesting. Each one is about 45 minutes long, and it looks like they do one about every week, and very, very interesting. They get some great people to share ideas from literally all over the world. I know in one that I listened to last week, they had some teachers from Tokyo talking about doing podcasts to help their students learn English. So that's a great one. Very Spatial is a new one that actually I just found out about today. The author emailed me, and I downloaded a couple, and I'll check those out in the next couple of days. Its focus is geography. And then the last one I'd like to really pump today is Bob Sprankle's website, Room 208. It's a podcast created by third and fourth graders in his classroom in Maine. And then this summer, Bob also did a great series of podcasts called Bit by Bit, which focuses on how he does the podcast from a technical aspect as well as from a teacher's aspect. And I know that Bob did that during the summer. I don't know if he plans on continuing that. I hope he does, because I do like listening to the student podcast. But in addition, the Bit by Bit podcast, I thought, had some great insight as to how he does what he does in the classroom. He also does one called The Bobby Bucket Show, which is kind of a focus on different children's books. And I listened to a couple of those driving in the car several weeks ago. And there was one in particular about baseball that was just great. Talked about a couple different children's authors and books about baseball, and it was a great show. So right now, those are some of the major ed tech podcasts that I'm listening to. I do listen to the Daily Source Code every once in a while, and I'll download a couple random things here and there. I do listen to Podcast 411, which is a great podcast that interviews other podcasters. But the list I provided on the show notes today was basically a lot of the ed tech stuff that I've been listening to lately. All right, I would like to talk a little bit today about my parent email newsletter, and I completely understand that I'm not revolutionizing the world of computers by doing a parent email newsletter. I'm sure quite a few people out there are doing the same thing, but by the same token, it's probably one of the better things I've done in the last 13 years of teaching. I've done this for 4 years now, and every time I have a parent-teacher conference, the parents overwhelmingly thank me for having an email newsletter. And I think that it's really cut down on a lot of the miscommunication that I think sometimes happens between students, parents, and teachers. I think that the amount of time that I've had to track down parents and explain things to them that we're doing in the classroom, or problems that have you know, become an issue in my classroom, those have dramatically decreased since I've done a parent email newsletter. And really the hardest part of doing it is at the beginning of the year when you're trying to gather all of the emails. I've done things where I've had students take home forms and their parents fill it out, and sometimes I'm off one if I think it's an O or a zero, and I find out later that I need to change the address. It takes a lot of time to track down the correct address, and parents do change their email addresses quite a bit during the year. I think that they probably get caught up with spam and just decide to set up a new Yahoo account or a new Gmail account or whatever. But parents do tend to kind of migrate their addresses, so you have to kind of stay on top of it. But once you have the addresses in your contact list, and we use Outlook, and so I just use a contact list within Outlook. Once I have that in, basically I type up a newsletter each week, and I try and send it out each Monday. And last year, towards the second semester, I tended to kind of get off track a little bit, and it was more like once every 2 weeks or once every 3 weeks. But the parents actually did contact me and say, hey, you know, where's your parent email newsletter? And so they were reading it, they did pay attention to it, and I'm going to try and be really vigilant this year about getting it out once a week this week. Just some basic stuff that I put in my newsletter. I try and tell them what's happening in class, since I know that many times if they do ask their student at home, you know, what'd you do in class today, they typically get a nothing, or, you know, we just did nothing in class today. So I do try and give kind of a general topic. You know, today we're studying about, or this week we're studying about the causes of the American Revolution, and we're focusing on the Boston Tea Party and some of the events with protests to taxes, for example, so that they have some idea what their student is learning. I also try and give them some heads up on when assignments are due, and they particularly like that so that they know that, hey, you've got a major project coming up on Thursday that's due. It's Tuesday night. Let's check and see where you're at. I also send out test alerts, and typically these are separate from the weekly emails. I'll send out an email maybe 2 days in advance saying, okay, we have a Unit 3 test coming up on Friday. So I give them a couple days notice so that they can then check with their students and say, you know, do you have a study guide? You know, do you know your material for this test? And then I'll also include links to my classroom website, which has a study guide and has copies of the notes and things like that, so that if they are at home and it's Thursday night and they realize that their student has a test tomorrow, they can do some work at home to kind of, you know, quiz their student a little bit or ask them at least about some of the major topics that are going to be on the test. I also try and give them enrichment opportunities. So, for example, if there's a great speaker coming up in the community that talks about a topic in history that we cover, I try and let them know about when that's happening and where it's happening. I'll also tell them about things that are happening in local museums, any type of history-related activities, to kind of give them extra opportunities to do things with their student to expand their knowledge of history. And then this year I'm trying a new feature, and a lot of times I'll hear a student come in and say, hey, Mr. Langhorst, did you see that great thing on the History Channel last night about the Civil War? It was great. It talked about the ironclads, and I'll talk, you know, students are super excited about it, and I really wish I would have known about it, because number one, I probably would have watched it, and number two, I would have let the rest of the students know about it. And so this year I'm trying to be really proactive, and I'm trying to really look at some of the scheduling coming up on some of the major networks like PBS, the History Channel, A&E, and I'm giving a little part of my newsletter a title of, you know, This Week in Television. And so I usually pick out two or three programs that I think will interest them that have a history related topic, and then I put that in the newsletter so that they kind of know ahead of time what's happening. And you know, maybe it's a show that isn't particularly in our curriculum area. For example, I know this week I put the link in for the History Channel special on Rome, and they're going to talk about the Colosseum in particular. And even though we don't do ancient Rome, I think that would be a really interesting topic for a lot of our students today. So I included that as one of the links. I also had a PBS show linked on, I believe, the flight that went down during 9/11 in Pennsylvania, that talks a little bit about what happened on that day. And that'll be shown on 9/11 coming up next week. So just kind of a new thing I'm trying to kind of get, you know, so maybe, again, some enrichment activities so that students might watch some of this stuff at home on their own. If they don't, I mean, that's fine too, but just kind of giving them a heads up about some opportunities out there. Right now I have 150 students in my six classes, and I believe I have email addresses for almost 75% of the parents. So, you know, I'll continue to try and work on some of those parents that I don't have the emails for. Maybe it's just been a miscommunication. Maybe they don't have email. I know a vast majority of my students have email at home. I think we're at about 95% of students have internet access at home. So most of them could set up an email account if they needed to. So I'm going to continue to work on the rest of those parents to see if I can get some of the holes filled. But that's basically what I do as far as my parent newsletter. I do also copy and paste a copy of the newsletter onto my webpage, and I included a link on the show notes for that. So even if you don't get the email from me, you could still go to the webpage and then see the parent newsletter. So if you want to check that out, and if anybody has any ideas, I know there's, you know, people that have done something similar to that. If they, you know, want to share their ideas or experiences with that, I'd love to hear what other people have done. One thing that I don't have done yet this week that I'd like to talk just a little bit about as I kind of wrap up the show is a study cast. And as David Warlick is always talking about content, it's not about, you know, it's not about the technology. It's not about the iPod. It's not about the laptop. It's not about the smart board. It's about the content and how we're changing the content. And I'm really trying to think of ways to use this new medium of podcasting and audio files to help students. And so what I'm going to try and do this year, when we have a test coming up, we have a test coming up on Friday this week, I'm going to try and have a study cast where I take the study guide and sit down and basically talk through the study guide and explain the different things that I think the students need to know for the test. And I'll then save it, put it as an MP3 file on my webpage, and literally a student could call that up at any time and basically have a study session with me at their convenience. So maybe it's two nights before the test, it's 8:30 at night, the student's at home. He could go to the website, do a direct link on the audio file, and basically listen to me kind of go through the study guide and explain what material he needs to know for the test, or she needs to know for the test. And I think that'd be a very useful tool. I'm not sure how many students would take advantage of that, but I'm willing to take the time to create the study cast, put it up, and then kind of see what happens as far as feedback. So that's something I'm hoping to get done tomorrow night. And once I get that done, I'll post a link on the show notes for the following show, and you can check that out and see what it's like. And again, if anybody's doing something like that, you know, I'd be really curious to know how it's worked for them, or any kind of experiences. But I'm just going to kind of call it my study cast and see what kids think. I've had class now for, we're in about the third week, and I've talked about podcasting a little bit, and the students seem kind of interested in it, but they really don't know a lot about it yet. I still think they're probably above, you know, the average American, maybe as far as understanding what an MP3 player is, how audio files work, how to access them from a web page. But, you know, I don't think they've ever really thought about it as an educational thing. And so that's one thing I'm trying to do this year, is to see how we can use an MP3 player and audio files with actual content in the classroom. So stay tuned, and I'll get back to you guys on how the StudyCast works for our first unit test coming up on Friday. All right, well, that's about all I've got for tonight. It's about 11:30 in the evening, and I'm going to call it a night for tonight. Keep listening. I know I looked at my feed burner information this last week, and at one point I was up to 14 subscribers, which I was thrilled with. My motivation for doing this podcast is not to see how many people will listen, but it is interesting to see that I'm getting some feedback from different parts of the country when somebody picks it up on iTunes or iPodder, or they stumble across my webpage. I do have quite a few teachers during the course of the year email me and say, hey, I was looking for lesson plans and I came across your webpage, or hey, I was doing a search on American history, saw your webpage, and kind of start to correspond with teachers from different parts of the country. So hopefully there are people out there listening to it. If you want to drop me an email, my email is speakingofhistory@gmail.com, and I would love to hear from you. Let me know what you're thinking. If you want to try and work maybe on a project together, I've got several teachers around the country right now that I'm trying to kind of see if we can get something lined up with American History for 8th graders as a collaborative project. So if you're an 8th grade American history teacher, drop me a line and we'll see if we can maybe get something together for the second semester that we can all work on, possibly a blog type project. So let me know. I'd love to hear what people are thinking out there. So I'm going to call it a night. Have a good evening. And I hope my next podcast will be a little bit sooner than 3 weeks down the road. Have a good night. This is Eric Langhorst for Speaking of History.